This is a production of the Z-Talk Radio Network. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Z-Talk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Wow. It's dark. Well, let's have some light on the subject.
Put on your critical thinking caps and please refrain from hugging. It's time for Dimland Radio with your host, Jim, Dr. Dim Fitzsimmons.
Hello and welcome to Dimland Radio here on the Z-Talk Radio Network at ztalkradio.com. I am your host, Jim, Dr. Dim Fitzsimmons. Remember, I'm not really a doctor. I just play Doctor Online.
Oh, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary. Pour a cheerful toast and
come
fill
on,
it,
guys.
Happy anniversary.
Oh,
but be careful,
please.
You don't fill it, happy anniversary.
No.
Oh, happy anniversary,
okay.
Happy
all right,
anniversary, happy anniversary.
Okay, let's go.
Happy anniversary.
All right, since the anniversary theme just played there, that can only mean one of two things. One, it's my wedding anniversary. Or two, it's the, or nearabouts enough, anniversary of Dimland Radio being on the Z-Talk Radio Network. It's not my wedding anniversary. That doesn't happen until October. This is, in a couple of days' time, on the 13th of March, it will be 14 years that I've been doing Dimland Radio here on the Z-Talk Radio Network. I don't know how many years that I've done it where it's been available as a podcast, just a straight-up podcast, where you don't have to tune in on Saturday nights at ztalkradio.com and go to the listen and chat room so you can listen at 11 p.m. Central on Saturday night. Show up then, about 11:01 or 11:02, the show comes on. I'll be in the chat room. You know, if you're not doing anything on a Saturday, I mean, it's Saturday night. What else is there to do? I mean, it's the night of the week where there's the least amount of things to do. So just, listen to Dimland Radio. Anyway, 14 years ago, I started doing the show. For the first couple few years, I did it live on Saturday nights, and then I realized I could just pre-record it and play it on Saturday because it just make it a little easier for me. And I've been doing that ever since. Dimland Radio has outlasted all the other paranormal shows that have shown up on Z-Talk Radio over the years. Even the flagship show, The Buzz, who it was the show of the owner of the station, Scotty Rourke. It was his show, and then I don't think he does anything on Z-Talk Radio anymore. Anyway, as far as a show, it's still there. The network's still there. He still pays for it. And I think there's some other shows on here. I don't know. But Dimland Radio, longest running show on Z-Talk Radio. It's just, the skeptic show on a paranormal network, with all this paranormal nonsense that these people talk about. I'm the one that's still here. Now, maybe those shows went on to bigger and better things. Better networks or bigger networks or, bigger podcast, downloads than I've got. Maybe. Because 14 years and I get about 14 downloads a show. So, one for each year. But I still do this. I don't know for how much longer I'll do this. But so far, it's for the foreseeable future. So, happy anniversary to Dimland Radio. Oh, why, thank you so much. 14 years. Anyway, and I'm also coming to you from the basement of Nostalgia Zone, which is a comic book store in Minneapolis. I work for the store. I enter inventory during the week, and then on Saturdays, I'm their Saturday register guy. I work with the customers all day on Saturday. It's a long day. It's a long day. Because I get here in the morning, and I record the show, and then I put away the books that I entered in over the course of the week before, and then I pull orders or start entering more stuff or whatever, deal with customers as they come in, and I enjoy it. It's a nice job. If you are collect comic books, we've got all sorts of back issues. We deal only in back issues. We don't have the new stuff as it comes out. We don't get that for a year or two or three after the stuff comes out. It's just whenever anybody brings in their collection and wants to sell them. So go and you can join our membership and you can save 10% on your purchases, and then you will also, each purchase builds points toward future purchases. So you can let them accrue and save a big chunk, or you can just use them as you go along. It's up to you. So NostalgiaZone.com is our website. Become a member. Start ordering comic books. We also have magazine, a selection of magazines, you know, heavy metal, eerie and creepy and crazy and mad, and Famous Monsters of Filmland. We have magazines of that as well. So just check out our website, NostalgiaZone.com. Become a member and buy a bunch of stuff. All right? I like having this job. So I am coming to you from the basement here. I didn't do a show last week, and that's because if you're following, you follow me on Facebook, you'll know this. I had COVID, and it's the second time I've had COVID. The first time I had COVID was almost precisely 2 years ago. Like 2 years into the pandemic, I got COVID, and now 2 years since then, I got it again. Not absolutely certain where I got the COVID, but I'm pretty sure it was from here, from Nostalgia Zone. Before the last show that I did, which was a couple weeks ago, boss number one, there's two bosses here. Boss number one told us that he was sick, and this is pretty bad. And then at some point, I think by the time I recorded last week's show, or maybe just after it, learned that he had COVID. I'm not exactly certain when I knew it was COVID, but learned that he had COVID. He had come into work the Thursday before, not feeling well, and boss number two was working with him and was very upset that this guy came in. You're sick. What are you doing coming here? Blah, blah, blah. Well, that Saturday, I come down to work. Boss number two comes in. He's wearing a mask. And he says, I'm going to wear this mask. I'm trying to keep my distance. He says, I feel okay, but I was around boss number one, and he's got the COVID. So, you know, and he did keep his distance. He kept his mask on through the day. But there were some times when we were close to each other working on something, or I was talking to him, and he was having his lunch, so he had his mask off. And, you know, there was some possible exposure moments. And I didn't wear a mask. Probably should have, but I didn't. And he's, like I said, he said he was feeling okay, but he said about, I don't know, some point in the afternoon, started to feel a little something, and he said, I don't know if I'm just being paranoid or if I'm really coming down with something. But later that night after we were closed, and that he let us know, oh, yeah, I got something, and I think by the next day we knew he had COVID. Now, as the day was starting at the store that Saturday, I got a text from somebody else that works here, or does work for this for Nostalgia Zone, and he asked if I was there. I was in the store alone. I said, no, boss number two is here. And he says, what? He's there after he gave boss number one so much shit for showing up sick? I said, well, he feels okay. He's wearing a mask. He's keeping his distance. And he went, all right, fine. All right, so Monday comes. I go to my regular job with my wife. That's the screen printing shop in Minneapolis. I go there. And I thought, I'm going to wear a mask because I don't know. I mean, I felt okay, but maybe there was something starting to happen. And again, I might have been paranoid because I was around somebody who was around somebody with COVID. So as the day progressed, I started feeling like, oh, I definitely have at least a cold coming on. So, you know, the next day, Amy and I went into work, and I said, I'm going to keep wearing my mask, and I'm going to, you know, leave early if we can, because there was stuff that we needed to get done. So we came in, and I didn't feel too bad, but, yeah, something was going. Left work early, went home, grabbed out some old COVID tests that we had. These were, we had three tests from a while back, and they all three were expired. But as a friend was telling me, he said you should still use them. The negative might, you might want to test again with a negative, you know, like in another day or so. But if it's a positive, you don't get too many false positives off of expired kits or the kits in particular. And he says, I, you know, still use it, he said, because he's been paying attention to stuff and the science and of the COVID. So he said, you know, try it, do it anyway. So I did. I tested myself on Tuesday after I got home, and it was negative. Fine. But I started feeling really bad as the evening progressed, so I told the boss, one of my bosses at the regular job, said, Amy and I are not coming in tomorrow. I feel pretty bad. I tested negative for COVID, but, you know, I'm going to take the day off. And he says, fine, take care of yourself, no worries. So Wednesday comes along, I'm home. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to take another test. Again, I grabbed one of the expired tests, and I used it. And again, it was negative. So I'm thinking, I as the day progressed, and I felt really bad, I said, this is a cold. This is a particularly bad cold, or maybe this is the flu. Because a couple of coworkers at the main job that I have, a couple of them had the flu. And they were coming into work a little bit while they were still dealing with it. And they both tested negative for COVID a few times. One of them actually went into an urgent care like the Sunday before the work week and tested for rotavirus, I think. That's just the other thing that's coming along, that's coming around. And for COVID and all that. Was tested for that, negative, and diagnosed with the flu. So, okay. So Wednesday, I decide I'm going to test again. It's negative. But as the day progressed, I was feeling pretty bad. I thought, I'm going to get new tests. So I went on down to the drugstore, wore a mask, got a couple of kits, which have two tests each in them, got it home, sat down, took a test. And I like to do this when I do the test, is I don't want to see the results before the 15 minutes are up. I have my phone, I put the timer on, 15 minutes, I do the thing, which is, put that thing up your nose and twirl it around. Ugh, especially the right nostril, tickles like crazy. It's not so much that it hurts, it just tickles and it's annoying. Anyway, so get the test going, and then I cover it up and go walk around for 15 minutes, because I don't want to get a preview. I want the reveal, right? So I do that, come back 15 minutes later, look at the test kit, and sure enough, I got COVID. You know, the two lines show up. If there's one line up on top, that's and no line underneath, that's a negative test. But if there's a line up top and the line underneath, the second line there, even if that second line is faint, that's a positive. You got COVID. So there it was. And it was a pretty solid line. I went, okay, I got the COVID. Let my boss know. I said, Amy and I are not coming in the rest of the week because I got COVID, and I don't want to spread it around there. Incidentally, if Amy got COVID, she got mild COVID. We never tested her. She never really got sick. She said, my throat's a little scratchy, got kind of runny nose. Sometimes it feels like I have a fever, but I don't feel sick. So while she was staying home anyway, so why waste a test, right? So we just figured, you're staying home anyway. And where she is at work, she can isolate very easily from everybody. So anyway, that was that Wednesday. Thursday, and I'm still staying home. And I thought, I got one more test left from that expired set that we had of the COVID tests. I'm just going to test again using that expired one to see if I can figure out maybe those first two negatives I got were false negatives, or maybe my viral load just wasn't enough to be detected yet from the kit. So let's use one of these expired, my last expired one, and let's try it. So I did. I did the whole 15-minute ritual thing where I didn't look, and I come back for the big reveal, and it was positive. And that second line showed up even stronger than that first positive that I had with the new kit. So I thought, So I don't know. I don't know if those were those first two tests were false negatives or if my viral load just hadn't gotten up there yet. But I did know that at least this one expired test would show a positive after a good test, a new test kit, not expired, showed it was positive. So, okay. So I tried to relax. My wife pointed out to you, you do not relax well. You see, I was sick enough to not go to work and not really do anything, but I wasn't sick enough to feel that I shouldn't, to not feel that I should be doing something. I kept thinking, I kept saying to myself, I should be doing something. I'm not doing anything. I should be doing something. But then when I tried to do it, it's just like, ugh, the energy wasn't there or whatever. But I just kept feeling like I should be doing something. And that's when she said, you do not relax well. Just relax. Just rest. So I managed, I guess. So anyway, go through the weekend. And it turns out we've been getting my dad's newspaper. I've been trying to cancel that subscription. They keep delivering the paper. I've called twice now to say, hey, you know, stop delivering this paper. And I still get it every day. And anyway, so over that weekend was getting the paper, and there was an article that the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and whatever, had adjusted their guidelines on COVID about, you know, when to return to your life, when to go back to work, when can you? And they had come to the conclusion that if your symptoms, your COVID symptoms, are mild and improving, and you haven't had a fever for 24 hours... And that's no fever without taking any kind of a fever reducer, not Tylenol or aspirin or something. If you haven't had a fever for that 24 hours, you're feeling better and improving, you can go back to work. They did recommend that if you're working among elderly people, maybe you put on you wear a mask, or if you're working around people who have compromised immune systems, wearing a mask would be a good idea. But you can go back to work. So that's what I did. It's that Monday, I wore a mask at work and went back. On that Tuesday, wore a mask again, and I worked. That Wednesday in the morning, I decided, okay, I'm going to test again to see. This was just this past Wednesday. I'm going to check again to see where I'm at. I grabbed one of the tests, which are the newer ones, the ones that aren't expired, and I was negative. So I stopped wearing the mask. And that's it. I mean, and it's a pain in the ass. You know, I saw that there was a statistic that was interesting that not quite 25% of Americans have never had COVID. They've gone through the whole, you know, the 4 years-ish of COVID in our land without ever getting it. And that's interesting. I think it's close to 77% of Americans have had COVID at least once. And, you know, but it's still a thing. It's still a thing, y'all. But that's, I followed the guidelines as far as when to go back to work. And so far, nobody else has gotten COVID. And that's good. But, ugh. So I missed the show last week. I'm sorry about that. Let's see. Anniversary. I don't know if I mentioned that I'm broadcasting from or recording in the basement of Nostalgia Zone, which is a comic book store here in Minneapolis. Go to our website, nostalgiazone.com, and become a member. You'll save 10%, and you'll earn to save even more later. I think if I already hit that, I just hit it again. So now I'm going to head to my first break. I think I've made it there. You're listening to Dimland Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network at ztalkradio.com. I'm your host, Jim, Dr. Dim Fitzsimmons. I'll return after this break.
Hey, this is Danny Potts from the Kentucky Ghost Chasers, and you're listening to Z-Talk Radio.
Wash your hands often to reduce the spread of germs and disease. To wash your hands properly, wet them, apply a quarter-sized amount of liquid soap, and rub them together for about the time it takes to sing the Happy Birthday song twice. Wash the front and back, in between your fingers, and under your nails. Dry them with a paper towel if possible, and then use the paper towel to turn off the faucet and open the door. If soap and water aren't available, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer. A message from the CDC.
Don't just take my word for it, but you are listening to Dimland Radio on Ztalk Radio Network.
Ztalk Radio is committed to bringing you the best radio possible. We will test your senses with innovative and entertaining radio programming. Honest, informative, inspirational, and on occasion, controversial. Our listening audience will also have the opportunity to interact with the show hosts and guests through live chat and call-in capabilities. You can't be left out of the loop. Tune into all our live shows once, and you'll never turn your computer off again. Ztalk Radio on your computer dial. Your healthy addiction.
Welcome back to Dimland Radio here on the Ztalk Radio Network at ztalkradio.com. I'm your host, Jim, Dr. Jim Fitzsimmons. Let's see, what haven't I got you? Hey, you want to hear a cool thing? This is a cool thing. This is a cool thing for me. Maybe not so cool for you, but it's a cool thing for me. Along with the COVID arriving, for me, I had something arrive on this past Monday. Was it this past Monday? The Monday before. It was the Monday before, that I never thought for the longest time, I never thought I would have it. I thought, no, this is just not going to be something I'll be able to afford to get. But then we sold our house, and we got a fair amount of money from selling the house. And so I said, that's it. I can get it now. And what arrived was The Avengers, issue number one. The very first issue of Avengers comic books, released in 1963. The Avengers just had their 60th anniversary last year. In fact, I found out that there was a Christmas tree ornament that's it's a reproduction of the comic book. You know, it's a little plastic reproduction of the comic book that, you know, shows the cover, and it's given a little 3D effect. You know, like the characters on the cover are molded plastic. You know, and it's a neat little ornament. A friend of mine had gotten one, and I said, I didn't even know that existed, and I looked and found it on eBay, and I got myself one there. But the actual comic book. Now, I thought this was going to be unattainable. My goal for the last several years of collecting comic books has been to have the first 200 issues of the Avengers, which the Avengers were my favorite comic title when I was a kid. It's my favorite. I like the Avengers. That was one of the first comic books I started buying when I started serious collecting. Not just this kind of hit-and-miss collecting. A friend of mine, Todd, his name is Todd, met him when I started in the third grade in 1973. We became friends, and he was a comic book collector, and I was just kind of tickling at comic book collecting. I liked that cover, I'd buy that book. It was not this thought that to own a series or something like that. I was drawing in the comic book, cutting out pictures out of the comic books, wasn't treating them with the reverence that I do now. And it was Todd's influence on me to do that. As we were approaching junior high, as we were getting to that level in our education, I'd hang out with him and over at his house, and I'd look at his comic book collection, and he had this magnificent collection. He had some really good books, and they were in good condition, and they were organized, and he was showing me that they got these great storylines that go through these books, and he was telling me about stuff about them, and just his example and his enthusiasm about collecting titles and just getting each month, getting the next book, and that his, just got me to start collecting comic books much more seriously. So The Avengers was one of those titles that I started buying. I think it was issue number 171 was the first one that I bought off the newsstand, and then started buying them from then on, and then, you know, went in to buy the back issues and get them. So over the years, I had collected virtually all of them. I was down to like four of them that I needed. Issue number 1, issue number 4, and then 11 and 12. I think those are the ones. It might have been 12 and 13. Something. I don't remember exactly. But those were the issues that I needed. I was able to get the 11 and 12 or 12 and 13. I was able to get those for fairly okay prices, but still pretty spendy. But I was able to get them. And I just was resigning myself that I'm just never going to be able to get issue number 1 and issue number 4. The importance of number 1 is obvious. It's the first issue that brought the characters together. The importance of issue number 4 was it was the reintroduction of Captain America into the Marvel comic books. He had disappeared. They'd stopped publishing him at some point in the mid-50s or later 50s. They stopped publishing Captain America. And now they brought him back for this issue in 1963 or 64. And so that was 1 and 4. They were always quite expensive. I was able to buy issue number 4 because of a gift from a departing boss at the silk screening shop, or the screen printing shop, the t-shirt shop that Amy and I work at. We got a very generous gift from him. Each of us got, everybody that worked there, each got a very generous cash gift from him. And I was, you know, and Amy and I decided to spend that money for fun. We were still waiting to get the money for the house sale to be completed, but we knew that was coming. We were pretty confident it was going to happen. It did. So we were good, right? And we bought some stuff, and I got number 4. So now, number 1, my sights are on that, sold the house, had the money, bought it, and I got it. And it's great. And it's not slabbed. Oh, I know I might have mentioned this before. There's this whole thing in comic books now, and it's been a thing for a few years. And that is sending your comic books out to a grading company. CGC is one of them, but there is a couple others. But CGC is like the big one. You send your books out. They have their professional graders grade, comb through your book, give it a grade, and then seal it into this piece of plastic. And then that book becomes even more valuable because it's gotten the stamp of it has the imprimatur of CGC saying that this is a 9.4 or a 9.8 in its grading. From 0.5 up to 10, I think they'll go. You get a specific grading. People trust CGC to grade the comic books properly, and so that book becomes even more valuable to sell. But it doesn't, for me, it doesn't become valuable to own. I would never buy, or I did buy one slabbed comic book, and I had the person who I bought it from, it was a private between two friends selling me the book, I had him take it out of the case. I don't want the case, I want the book raw, I don't want it slabbed. I want to look at my comic book, not just the cover and the back cover, but the pages in between. Slab a baseball card, it's just the front and back, but a comic book has pages, and if I decide to sell my collection to maximize whatever money I'm going to get for it, then I might slab the big books. Slab that Avengers number 1. Slab that Avengers number 4. You know, get it out there to CGC, have them graded, and then put them out for sale so that I can get the biggest bang for my buck, as it were. Get the most money out of it. But I don't plan on selling my comic books. I don't. But if I were, then slabbing makes sense to me for selling them. But it doesn't make sense to me for buying them. So that's kind of this weird, you know, contradiction. I don't want to own a slabbed comic book. So the Avengers, number 1 and 4, they were raw copies. That's what the place where I bought them. They had a bunch of slabbed copies, which were much more expensive. But they had a couple raw copies, and that's the ones I got. And I'm happy with that, because that's how comic books should be. That's my feeling. There's a group on Facebook. I'd mentioned that it came raw because I put up that I got the Avengers number one, and somebody, you know, I made some comment about not slabbing, and they said, you should be join our group. Well, we got a Facebook group that's like the Never Slab Comic Books group. So I did. And as I laid out, the only time I would consider slabbing a comic book is if I'm going to sell it. But otherwise, no. Why would you do such a thing? But there are collectors that like the idea of slabs. You know, I can get the, you know, a reproduction book of it, or I've got an app where for Marvel comic books that I can read all the comic books ever produced by Marvel. By just, you know, reading them on my phone, which I've been doing. I've been reading the Fantastic Four. I'm up in the 90s, issue 94 or something like that. You know, I've been reading them. They're all still written by Stan Lee. At some point, a different writer takes over. Stan Lee stops writing comic books and he becomes the editor mainly and publisher. But anyway, so I can do that, but if I'm going to have a book in my collection, I want it raw. I don't want it slabbed. It's just, it doesn't... Call me an old cranky man who goes out and shakes his fists, or cranky old man. There's an order of way of descriptors before a noun. It's a thing. Anyway, so yeah, I'll be shaking my fist at the cloud. Old man yells at cloud. Yeah, that's me. But yeah, I'm not doing it. But it's a cool thing. It arrived that Monday. It was so exciting. And I have it. It's in my collection. It's now boxed away where I'll never look at it again. I just know I have it. No, I'll take it out and look at it again. I'll do that. I mean, the one thing about slabbing a comic book is that it does preserve the condition that it's in. As long as you don't drop that slab into water. I mean, I don't think it's waterproof. I mean, you know, it something like that could damage it, but if you're careful. And you might be asking, why would you stop at just 200, at 200, 1 through 200? How many more are there? I think the title, that particular title that started out in 1963, I think it goes up into the 600s, issue numbers. But I just wanted the first 200. I had a bunch of them past 200 at some point because I was still collecting them, but I started losing interest very quickly after issue 200. The stories weren't all that compelling. The artwork got absolutely horrible. Excuse me, I have to take a sip here. Sorry about that cough, but I don't have a cough button. Ooh, that's some good Dr. Pepper Zero. Another sip, hang on. Oh my, that's good. Anyway. So the stories got, or the artwork, in my opinion, I'm sure there are people, the one artist I'm thinking in particular, which I won't say his name, I'm sure there may be someone out there that guy is their favorite artist. They just love his style. I think he's a good inker. He was a good inker, but as a penciler, and again, this is my opinion, his stuff sucked. When I saw that he became the regular artist on there after great artists like John Byrne had been drawing it, and before John Byrne there was John Buscema, who just did fantastic work on there, and there was Sal Buscema, who's not as good as his brother John, but was a capable comic book artist, a good storytelling, had a good style. And then John Byrne comes along and just blows the lid off the thing. George Perez was in between John Byrne and Sal Buscema. George Perez came in there, and George Perez's work was wonderful, and actually you got to see it improve as he went through the years drawing the Avengers. Because when he first started, you could see that he was newer to the industry, and you could see that he was still learning his craft a little bit. And then they paired him up with this great anchor named Pablo Marcus. The two of them together were just fantastic. They looked great. John Byrne, when he was working on the X-Men titles with Terry Austin, Terry Austin was the anchor. Those two together, again, just fantastic. But anyway, so after having those kinds of artists creating the visuals in those comic books, and then going to this other guy? I mean, before they got to him, some of the older artists that had been around for a while. Gene Colan did a few issues of it. Now, Gene Colan was never one of my favorite artists, and I never thought that his style meshed well with superheroes. I never thought that he had his style really meshed supremely well with a series called Tomb of Dracula. When he was drawing Dracula comic books, that's where his style just, this is what it should, you know, this is where he should be. He shouldn't be drawing superheroes, because it just doesn't quite work. Not for me, anyway. So he's a great artist, just didn't fit in the superhero genre, but Dracula and horror, he fit in that genre very well. And there was this other artist, Carmine Infantino. And he was a guy that goes back to the 50s. You know, he worked on the Flash comics for DC for a long time. And Infantino was never my favorite artist. I didn't particularly care for how he drew his figures and that. And then as he got later in his life, his figures became, they looked like they were rubber bands. They're stretchy, weird looking. Just weird. Not for me. So, but then after those two fellas, this other guy comes on. And his, it was just horrible. I do have one issue beyond the first 200. It's number 239. And the reason I have that one is because it featured David Letterman and Late Night with David Letterman. He was beginning to be big at the time, and Marvel Comics and Stan Lee, you know, especially, always, you know, they never missed a gimmick. And they said, hey, that David Letterman's kind of hot right now. Let's get him in a comic book. And they had the Avengers go to the NBC studios and had Letterman in there for some reason, whatever. It was great to have Letterman in there, but the art sucks. Oh, God, the art sucks. So I will put on the show notes page, which you can get to by going to dimland.com, click on the show notes /blog option. You'll get to the show notes for this show and the other shows I've done. And I'll have an image of the cover of that Avengers comic book that featured David Letterman. And it's by that artist. And like I said, the cover sucks. Okay, I think I'm going to take my next break. You're listening to Dimland Radio on the ZTalk Radio Network at ztalkradio.com. I am your host, Jim, Dr. Dim Fitzsimmons, letting you know that I'm going on a break. I'll be back, you know, when it's done.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Do you believe in ghosts? Do you think Bigfoot is real? Do you suspect that your neighbor is really Val Tor, leader of the lizard people of Bendar 3? Well, Dr. Dim doesn't, and he'll tell you why when you tune in to Dimland Radio Saturday nights, 11 Central, midnight Eastern on Z-Talk Radio Network. It's an hour of science promotion, pop culture rants, personal observation, and of course, skepticism. Join Jim, Dr. Dim Fitzsimmons, Saturday nights, 11 Central, midnight Eastern for Dimland Radio on Z-Talk Radio Network.
He's endlessly pushing the rock of reason up the hill of paranormal. It's Dr. Dim, and you're listening to Dimland Radio on Z-Talk Radio Network.
I am living on Channel Z.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
I am living on Channel Z.
I've got a pocket full of pretty green. I'm going to put it in a fruit machine. I'm going to put it in a jukebox. It's got to play all the records in the...
And welcome back to Dimland Radio here on the Z-Talk Radio Network at ztalkradio.com. I am your host, Jim, Dr. Dim Fitzsimmons. You want to know another cool thing? This I found out by somebody shared this on Facebook. And I'm not going to give away what you're going to find there. There's an auto parts store chain called O'Reilly. O'Reilly Auto Parts. I don't know how national it is. But it's an auto parts chain store. And you can go to their website, which is... It's O'ReillyAuto.com. And O'Reilly is spelled O-R-E-I-L-L-Y. A-U-T-O. O'ReillyAuto.com. So what you'll do is you go to that website, right? And up at the top of the page, there's a little window... There's a little slot where you can write in... searching for what you need, you know, windshield wipers, catalytic converter, whatever, you know, some auto part that you're looking for. Well, what you can put in there, put in this number, put in 121G. I know G is not a number. 121G. Put that in for that search and then search for it, and an item will come up. It's fun. Some of you younger folks might not understand the reference to it, but people my age and older, and maybe not that much, and a bit younger than me too, you know, people in their 50s, should recognize it almost immediately. I don't want to give away what it is. It's not actually available. You can't actually buy it. It does say that the item is not available for sale. But it shows that somebody at O'Reilly Auto Parts has a sense of humor. You know, whether the company knows that, you know, does corporate know that this is on their website, or did somebody who developed a website for them just kind of put that in there as a little joke and says to their buddies, yeah, put in 121G in the search and look and see what I dropped in there. And, you know, just that, like, and then it just started to trickle out and got known. Or was this something the company knew about and said, yeah, we like that idea. So we're having a little fun. Let's not look at this as some kind of stuffy business institution thing that, you know, we can't crack a smile super seriously. No, let's show that we can have a little fun. And so that's all I'm going to say about it. I thought it was neat. I think it's kind of cool. It shows that the company has a little sense of humor, a little heart, or at least somebody there does. And so check it out. Okay, so you go to O'ReillyAuto.com, click in that little search, look up at the top, you'll see a little, you know, magnifying glass with a little window. You know what the search. Put in 121G. And have a little chuckle. Hopefully you know what that thing is. the Pentagon, I guess, has come out with their conclusion over this latest investigation into the UFO UAP phenomena. You know, there was another congressional hearing in which some fellow there said that, well, I was told by somebody who was told that there's you know, UFO parts in our government, and that there was a crash in which non-human biologic material was obtained. I don't know. I think I've talked about this before, but non-human biological material. Yeah. Non-human biological material. You know, that is every life form on this planet that isn't human. Everything alive that isn't human can be reduced to being called non-human biological material. Grass, earthworms, the coronavirus. I think I can go into that category. Non-human biologic could be a dog, could be an elephant, could be a whale, could be a raccoon. It could be anything that just isn't human. Let's not jump to the conclusion that it's a little green man from another planet, or a little gray man, or whatever you want to say that they are. So the Pentagon has come out and said, yeah, there's no there. This is a big nothing burger. These videos, I talked about it on the last show when I talked about the UFO movie They Don't Want You to See, Brian Dunning's documentary about the current state of ufology, and extremely plausible explanations for these videos that we're seeing and what we're seeing there. You know, like the triangle in the night vision, you know, the triangle lights in the night vision video that was taken by the Navy. Somebody in the Navy was taking it. You know, it turns out that the triangular light that you see moving along and blinking is very much likely to be just a regular aircraft, and its lights are blinking. Because that's the pattern at which these lights blink. And there's an airport right in that direction where they're taking the video. And that's what it is. And then all of the lights that you see, like stars and all that, they all have a triangular shape because of the aperture of the camera lens. Or the camera, you know, I don't know if I've got that right. But there's the aperture part of the camera that opens and closes to let in the light to expose the film or whatever it is that's, you know, whatever it does when it takes a picture. It's triangular shaped. So a blurry light takes on that triangular shape. That's why. So the Pentagon, I guess, has said, there's nothing there. There's nothing. Now, the conspiracy theorists are all going to say, well, this is just part of the cover-up. So they can never be wrong. So there's always going to be somebody out there. You know, there's always going to be, you know, these UFOs, they're actual alien spacecraft. They're always going to have room to believe that because they'll never accept an explanation that says, no, that go fast video you're seeing is, that they call go fast, it's taken from a jet of some object flying at high speed. But it's actually the jet that's moving at high speed, and the object that's being looked at is barely moving. This is kind of moving along with the breeze. Well, the jet is moving. That's taking the video. So that's what's moving. And that thing that's just floating along there, it's probably a balloon, one of those Mylar-type balloons. It's probably what it is. It's not some alien spacecraft. It's not, you know, it's just, And I, like I said in the last time, I'm not going to say, how would these super intelligent beings know we're here? I guess if they can find this planet by looking through telescopes and see the color spectrum, you know, our colors, you know, which shows what chemicals and gases and such and whatever's in our atmosphere, they would be able to tell that's a planet filled with life. They would be able to tell that. And they said, let's go there. But depending on how far away they are, you know, and even the closest star, I think, if we went out there to the closest star to us, other than the sun, I think it's 4 light years away. So traveling at the speed of light, it would take 4 years to get there. And we can't travel the speed of light. We just can't. It's just, these laws of physics say as you approach the speed of light, what you are, your vehicle, you and your vehicle moving at that speed begin to gain mass, and that fights against your ability to go fast. So it just keeps you away from breaking that speed, getting to the speed of light. And if it could get to the speed of light, it would still take us 4 years to get there. And Star Trek isn't ever going to happen. We're not ever going to have that kind of spacecraft with artificial gravity, and it's not, that can warp space. It's just not likely to ever, it's not ever going to happen. I mean, I don't know. It just seems like it's just, we're not being visited by aliens. Not now, not ever, and very likely never in the future. We might be able to be contacted by them through signals traveling through space. That might happen. But if we're going to find out that there's life out there, we're going to, through our methods of looking at planets and that, we're going to see that, yeah, that planet has life on it. Or very likely, I don't know if we'll be able to absolutely ascertain that it does have life on it, or if life is intelligence. But we might send a signal toward it to see if maybe we get a response. That's probably how we're going to contact people. Oh, so this Pentagon says, yeah, there's no there. It's a big nothing burger. It was a waste of taxpayer money and congressional time. It's just a waste. And it's the same stories. It's the same people. These people all believe in UFOs, and they keep, their threshold for evidence, their bar for the quality of evidence is exceedingly low. Somebody told me a story. I believe them because they're credible. So that means that aliens are visiting us. Yeah, no. It means the person telling you what they saw probably doesn't know what they saw. They're making a mistake. Anyway. And did you see the State of the Union address? Now, I have to admit, I have not watched the whole thing yet. I've watched a lot of clips from it. I've watched some reaction to it. So President Sleepy Joe got up there and showed the country that and the world that he's not sleeping. He's not sleepy. Now, all the right-wingers that were accusing him of being a doddering old fool are saying, well, he's too aggressive now. What is he on? What drugs have they given him? Come on. just admit the guy can do the job, and I liked what he did. I liked that he called out the Republicans on their bullshit. I liked that he addressed the justices, the Supreme Court justices, the ones that showed up. Clarence Thomas didn't. I wonder why not. But he addressed them about Roe v. Wade. And, talking about, the court and their decision had said something about women having, a political voice. And Joe, Sleepy Joe, says to him, yeah, you're going to find out. You're going to find out what kind of a voice. We've been finding out. Every time I start to feel like, oh, goddamn, Peerless Loser is going to get reelected. Every time it starts to seem like that, there's another election that comes along that goes the correct way. Correct by me. The George Santos site, he had been boosted from Congress. They can get rid of. That lying sack of shit, they can get rid of. But they can't get rid of the big orange lying sack of shit. They kowtow to him. So, they get rid of him. And then they have a special election, and a Democrat wins it. Santos was a Republican. A Democrat wins the site. A somewhat conservative Democrat, but a Democrat who's going to go along in line with President Biden and his vision for the country more than any Republican would. Might disagree with him here and there, but that's going to happen. But a Democrat took that. And so it keeps seeming like Peerless Loser is going to just walk back in there, become president and declare himself president for life, disband the courts and disband Congress and all that, and just place governors in each state that are Republican and say, okay, this is how it's going to be. Hey, Mega, happy? You happy now? You've got a dictatorship. Is that what you wanted? Now, I don't know that he'll do all that. I don't think he's going to get reelected because of all these things, all these victories that take place. You know, the pundits and all that keep saying, oh, Joe's weak, and the polls are showing that people are concerned about his age, and I think this State of the Union is going to go at least a good ways into dispelling that. But each election that comes around seems like it's a loss for Republicans. So I'm trying to remain at least somewhat optimistic. Who the hell knows what's going to happen if the orange one gets back in that office? This is going to sound a little bit sexist, I know, but you know, this notion of how women are and how men are, you know, when men are faced with a problem, they try to come up with ways to fix it. With women, when women are faced with a problem, they want to talk about it, be heard about it, be understood about it. They're not looking for a solution necessarily. They just want sympathy and empathy. They just want that. Now, I don't know if that's actually how men and women are. This is a stereotype. This is an idea that's out there. But if that is true, in this little case here, the Republican Party is the woman in this when it comes to the southern border. And the Democrats are the men in this when it comes to that, because the Democrats want to solve the problem. The Republicans just want to talk about the problem. They want to complain about the problem. There was a solution. Maybe it wouldn't completely fix the border, but it would go a long way into making things better at the southern border when it comes to immigration. And it was a bill that came up in the Senate, was written by a conservative Republican, mainly, and it was agreed to by the Senate, you know, Democrats and Republicans, and they you know, and the president said, I will sign that bill, but the House needs to pass its version of it. And the House Speaker, this Mike Johnson fella that just sat behind President Biden, and just anytime he disagreed, he just shake his head, make his look on his face. But anyway, said it was dead on arrival. And then the Republicans in the Senate backed out on it. And the president rightfully pointed us, what didn't you like about the bill? What's the problem? It was this stuff. It was written by a conservative. And they showed the senator who did the writing of that bill. James Lankford, I think his name is. They showed him while President Biden is talking about what that bill had. And Lankford, he nods and he says, that's true. He says that he's on camera saying he's agreeing with President Biden. But his party is so magnified, they just want power. And in order to get power, we got to scare the old white people that the brown people south of our border are taking over the country. We got to scare them in that. Because if we do something that fixes it, well then, we can't scare the old people. We can't scare the white people anymore. Because we did something to fix it. Instead of doing something to fix it and then campaign and say, hey, we worked with our Democratic colleagues. We came up with this bill. We think it's a good one. And, you know, to tout it as, here's an achievement. Vote for us Republicans. Because we got this done. Vote for us. Instead, oh, the border's terrible. You got to vote for us. Because we'll do something about it once the orange fella's back in there. Whatever. And before I go, you may be familiar with a band called the Velvet Underground. Back in 1967, they're an art rock band affiliated with Andy Warhol, led by Lou Reed, and they had a song. They were very, for the time, very honest about drug use and things. You know, there's a song that they did that's called Heroin, which is like a 7-minute long song. It's very sparse in its music. It's just got this it's got a violin that's just kind of playing almost the same note through the whole thing, but it just kind of it's the song is meant to give you the feeling of what it's like to be taking heroin, right? Lou Reed wrote it. Lou Reed would know. He's done the heroin stuff. Well, there's this song called Waiting for the Man, and it's about a heroin addict heading into this neighborhood in order and into some building and just waiting for his man, and his man is his dealer. He's going to come and get him his heroin, whatever $26 is going to be able to buy, because that's what the addict has. $26 in my hand, I'm waiting for my man, you know. And it just gives this honest depiction of what it's like to be an addict, what you go through waiting for your dealer, that kind of thing. And it's a good, I like the song, it's got a nice groove to it and all that. Well, Keith Richards, you know him, he's a member of the band The Rolling Stones, you know, one of the great rock bands from the 60s, not the greatest, that of course would be The Who. But, you know, I remember the old debate, you know, which is the better rock band, the Beatles or the Stones? And I say, well, that answer is easy, it's The Who. So anyway, well, Keith Richards has recently released a cover of Waiting for the Man. And he's, you know, the video is on YouTube. I'll link to it on the show notes page. Go to dimland.com, click on the show notes / blog option. You'll get to the link. And he's, there's a couple of things. He's 80 years old. His hands are just gnarled with arthritis. It has to be what's going on there. He's just got these gnarled hands. And I was watching, he's doing some stuff in there. Like, what I've seen him doing in his live shows is he just does, like, flourishes. He just, like, chords. And he's like, I don't know, he doesn't seem like he does a lot of lead playing. But then I was watching this video, and there's parts where he's sitting with a guitar and he's playing lead. He's doing, you're watching the fingers going and notes being picked, you know, being strummed and picked. And you're seeing him do it. And it's like, well, those hands are still pretty dexterous for all that gnarliness. And he's old. He's an old guy. So I was watching it. And it's as a cover goes, it's okay. I still like the original much better, but it's okay. But I found myself thinking something watching this video, and I caught myself about halfway through. I was watching Keith Richards singing this song, "Waiting for My Man," which is about a drug addict waiting for their dealer to get their heroin. And I found myself thinking, which I stopped myself, but I found myself having this feeling thing. It's like, I'm looking at an old man. Keith Richards, old man. This dude is old, and he's singing this really hip song about drug addiction, and you know, from the late 60s. And I was thinking, what does this old man know about drug? Oh, that's right. It's Keith Richards. He knows about drugs.
Good night, Herr Doctor.
Good night, Frau Blücher.
Well, that's the end of another show. Sorry I was gone last week, but I'm over the COVID, although I still have a little cough, apparently. Anyway, you've been listening to Dimland Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network at ztalkradio.com. I'm your host, Jim Dr. Jim Fitzsimmons. Remember to be skeptical, and extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. And also remember to sleep with the lights off.
You can check out my show notes at dimland.com. Just click on the blog option. And you can email your questions and comments to drdim@dimland.com. That's drdim@dimland.com. And the opening theme song, Ram, is by The Yolius and is used with permission. Thank you.
This has been a production of the Z-Talk Radio Network.
And now, a message to our competitors.
Thanks
for tuning us in.
Bonjour, Monsieur Dim. You are too clever for us naughty people.
Well, I'm going to hell.